Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law. We started this podcast months ago because we love just chatting with each other about big things and little things and everything in between. And we had a hunch that there were others like us who were out there just really wanting to dive in deep to great conversation with their friends and loved ones. So that's what we do here at the Mama Bear Dares podcast. We interview women who are inspiring and interesting and doing just pretty fantastic things with pretty everyday lives. We do that on Mondays, and on Wednesdays we tackle the headlines and we talk about issues that are floating around in this world and in our minds. So today we have a great interview with Nicole Calloway Rankins. She is an OBGYN and an integrative health coach. She's a wife and a mom and just a fascinating person. Wouldn't you agree, Tessie?
I know. And actually, Leslie, we are recording this intro if we have our night voices, because it's pretty late at night, at least for me, on Sunday night before we drop this interview. But it feels important because we've had some feedback that, like, people want to know about health. Our listeners want to know about health. And this woman has years of college, you know, degrees after degrees. She's got all the degrees. Plus, she just has the on-the-ground experience, too, that comes alive, really, in this interview.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Well, we won't take a long time on this introduction, but we do want to point out just a few things to our listeners that they should be listening for throughout the conversation. And we spend about the first 20 minutes or so talking about pregnancy and really the act of giving birth. Now, if you're a listener who's not currently pregnant or not trying to get pregnant or preparing for birth, it's okay. You're still going to find this part interesting. But I think it's just fascinating for everyone. I think everyone loves a good story and a little bit of information about this part, this really precious part of life.
Yeah. And really what we're saying is, like, don't be fooled. If you are not in that stage of parenting, don't turn it off, because after we talk about birth and labor and all of that, we actually get to just the health crisis in America. We get to why we're so unhealthy, why women need to take better care of ourselves. We get into the good stuff, right? The real meat of the conversation. But we kept the bit in the beginning because, of course, we have listeners that are in that stage. But it also really sets up how Nicole came to be who she is now, what she was seeing on the ground that's propelled her to make differences in her own practice, really.
Right. And this is an incredible woman who looked at the overall healthcare system in America and just got a little bit uncomfortable. But rather than walking away from it, she has kind of developed this hybrid of healthcare that is absolutely, it sounds wonderful, and it's really, really interesting. I know our family is in the process of finding a new doctor, which is really daunting. I didn't really realize what a big deal that could be until we were in that situation where our family doctor had retired. And it's really made me think about, what do I want out of healthcare for my family? And just hearing that it doesn't have to be, or it doesn't have to look like it always has, was really freeing and really interesting. And we hear that from Nicole.
I know. And you guys, like we said, we don't want to spend a lot of time. Every minute is worth your time, I promise. So if you're like Leslie and you're currently looking for a new healthcare provider, Nicole actually offers online health coaching, and she's given a great thing to our listeners. She's offering $50 off a session with her. She gives first a free consultation so you can see if you guys match up on energy and all of that. So definitely check that out. But she's giving you $50 off. I mean, that's awesome.
I know. Do you think she's just giving it to listeners, or do you think hosts can apply too?
I think definitely we'll hosts. This isn't like those old radio giveaways that, like, if you knew a family member that worked there, you couldn't get it. Right. I think we can get it too. I hope.
Awesome. Well, let's jump into our conversation with Nicole. Nicole Calloway Rankins is a board-certified OBGYN, an integrative health coach, a wife, and a mom to two girls. As a woman who dedicates her life to helping other women discover health and wellness in a holistic, respectful, and consistent way, we believe she will help you, our Mama Bear listener, be inspired to live your healthiest life as well. Nicole, welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast.
Thank you so much, Leslie and Tessie. Really excited to be here today.
Yay, us too. We're excited to have you. So let's start with you telling us a little bit about how you grew up. Let us know where you're from, what your life might have been like, and maybe, you know, sprinkle in some details about whether you were always interested in medicine.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Hampton, Virginia. It's on the coast of Virginia, about 30 minutes or so from Virginia Beach. And I really had a pretty lovely and idyllic middle class upbringing. I have no complaints about my childhood. I'm the middle of three girls. My parents have been married for 53 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yep. They still live in the house that we grew up in.
Oh.
Yeah. My mom, she taught math for over 50 years in middle school and college. And then my dad started out as a driver at UPS, and then he worked his way up into a management position. So that's my family.
Wow, that's really cool. So your mom was a math teacher, and I love hearing that, you know, with all of the emphasis on women and math and science. Did that influence your interests as a kid?
Well, yeah, I never had that, like, girls should be afraid of math kind of thing. I mean, my mom taught math and she was very, very good at it. So I never had that, and definitely always interested in science. I wasn't always interested in medicine. My undergraduate majors were actually math and mechanical engineering. So I thought,
really?
I thought I was going to be an engineer.
That's incredible. And actually, you being one of three daughters makes me believe that in the end, like, just your fascination and love for other females had to have had some influence, though, on you going into obstetrics and gynecology, though, right? Or is this just me putting stuff on you?
You know, maybe it did. I kind of ended up going into OBGYN because I wanted to take care of women and I wanted to be able to do procedures, and it combined the best of both worlds. But sure, certainly being around a lot of girls, I naturally have an affinity to want to take care of and be around women.
Mm-hmm. So what brought you to Duke? I mean, that's a pretty legit school. Duke is great.
It is. So, and I really enjoyed my time there. So after deciding on OBGYN, I initially thought I wanted to be a GYN oncologist. That is a specialist who takes care of women with GYN cancer. And so, like, gynecologic cancers, like uterine cancer, ovarian cancer, so forth. And it's a really competitive field. So I had to do a residency training program at the best place I could. And I was fortunate enough, I did pretty well in medical school, to interview at several top institutions. And I really ended up liking Duke, and thankfully they liked me too.
So where do you think the strong, you know, academic background kind of came from? I'm always looking for hints as how to be a better parent myself. And so when I hear, you know, successful people telling their stories, I'm always curious, like, did you see your parents reading all the time? Like, were they, you know, how did that happen, do you think, for you? Or what have you observed about your own childhood and then your interests in being a lifelong learner, and how are you transferring that then to your girls? Could you speak on that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I was always a big reader. I just always liked to read. And my parents, you know, certainly encouraged that. And for us, it wasn't really an option whether or not to go to college. We were just told that, you know, you're going to college after you finish. And my dad didn't finish college. So it wasn't that, you know, both of them had that background and experience, but they had a very strong sense that education affords opportunities. So we knew from early on that college was in our future. And education is just in my family. I'm sort of the oddball in a sense, being in medicine. My mom taught
me. Oh, really?
My older sister, she passed away 5 years ago, but she was a principal, my elementary school principal. My younger sister teaches special education. I have a cousin who's an assistant principal, an aunt who was a principal. Oh, so it's like a lot of education in my family.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So speaking of education, then you have to get a lot to become a doctor. Yes. So can you talk a little bit, just for listeners who might not know, just remind us of kind of the process. I mean, you do your undergrad and then take us through the steps of becoming an OBGYN.
Yeah, so you do your undergrad, you do medical school, which is 4 years. And then after you graduate from medical school is when you actually learn how to train, you know, how to be whatever it is you want to be. So you have to do your residency training program.
Okay.
And the OBGYN residency training program is 4 years.
Nicole, what were those first years in training like for you? I'm sure there are other mama bears out there like me who have really weird obsessions with the shows like ER and Grey's Anatomy. But what was it really like to be a woman in that field in those early years for you?
So to be honest, it's mostly not like those TV shows. You know? Everybody's not like sleeping with one another and all that kind of stuff.
So the sex is taken out of it.
It just wasn't really there. But one thing is similar. Your first year is tough. And that was my hardest year of training. When I did my intern year, it was before work hour restrictions. And this is going to sound a little bit crazy. But right now, residents are restricted to 80 hours per week. And they have to have a certain number of, like, one day off per week, and they can't work a certain number of hours in a row. And although that sounds like a lot, 80 hours in a week, that's actually pretty typical. But my intern year, we didn't have those restrictions. So I frequently worked over 100 hours a week.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. And it was tough. I remember being very tired at Christmas, my first year, so 6 months in, and just crying because I was exhausted. And then one morning I overslept and like caught up on all this sleep, and it was like, oh, okay, let me just get back in the game and I think I can do this. And then after that it got a little bit better, and each year got progressively easier, but that first year was tough for sure.
Yeah. What about being a woman specifically? I'm so curious about that because I feel like often we have to prove ourselves over and above anyway, and then, you know, you add in like being a doctor is already a very intense and competitive field.
Yeah, that's a great question. OBGYN is a little unique in that it is rapidly becoming a female dominated field. So most of us in training, and this is even me back, 2002 was when I started training. I'm dating myself, but most of the residents were women, and most of the folks training today are women. So I don't think that there's necessarily anything unique in OBGYN about being a woman. I think if you ask someone who's training in orthopedics or neurosurgery or male dominated fields, they'd have a very different perspective.
Yeah.
But so many of us are women that it made it a really nice environment.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, when you're in a situation like that, that's so very intense, people tend to bond really quickly. Would you say that was true for you? Did you build relationships as you were kind of building your toolbox of practical knowledge?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, you're working with people very closely. One of my best friends is someone I trained with. So you definitely build those long-term relationships.
Oh, I love that. I would say the bulk of our listeners, although we've gotten a lot of feedback lately that they're not all moms, for sure, but they're women either who are moms, like I said, or they're considering motherhood. So what advice can you give them with your, I mean, obviously there are books upon books upon books, but you have a lot of practical knowledge and then you've also had children yourself. What can you tell them about a healthy pregnancy?
Yeah, the biggest thing I would say is try not to stress. Recognize that the vast majority of women will have normal pregnancies and healthy babies. So start from a place of believing that this is going to be a good, smooth process and not worry so much about the rare things that can potentially happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then like having a healthy pregnancy really starts before you get pregnant. So you should be in the best health you can. Try to get your optimal weight, exercising, eating well. And those, of course, are habits that'll serve you well throughout not just your pregnancy, but of course your life. So if you can get yourself in the best state of health possible before you're pregnant, and then even mental health as well. And then remember that most of the time, vast majority of women, it's normal, it's healthy, and things are going to be well. And those are the things that I hope women remember.
So, Nicole, we talk a lot about sort of just taking care of yourself, self-care on the podcast and how important that is. And during pregnancy, you know, it's equally as important. We should always be paying attention to ourselves and our bodies. Can you talk a little bit, though, on just the idea of a stressful pregnancy and kind of the science behind what then can happen with the child? Not to like scare you into don't be stressed while you're pregnant, but just to talk about how there is a connection and how maybe more than ever it is important to really treat yourself well.
Yes, that very, very important topic. Stress is a detriment, not just to pregnancy, but when you're not pregnant, of course, but in pregnancy, it can actually affect the growth and development of the baby. So one of the big things that we may see is that the baby is small. So the baby doesn't gain as much weight as we would like. That's the biggest thing that stress can do. It can maybe even affect the placenta and the ability of the placenta to work correctly. So self-care is definitely important.
Interesting.
Anecdotally, I mean, I obviously don't have the years of medical knowledge that you do, but anecdotally, I feel also like my friends who are really, really stressed in pregnancy then have babies who also kind of have that same energy afterwards. Like they don't sleep very well, they don't eat very well. You know, there's just this, it feels like there's a relationship there as well, especially because that's often a first child. And then their second child, they're like, oh, I'm not nearly as stressed and my baby's great, you know?
Right.
So do you see that a lot of times as well?
Yeah, I don't know that there's any real science behind that,
right?
But, that I know off the top of my head, but for sure. Yeah, when you have that energy and that stress and maybe you continue that even after the baby's born, sure, it may affect how the baby interacts and is maybe more fussy. Absolutely. Stress also contributes to preterm birth. I don't know how I forgot that. Stress definitely contributes to preterm birth.
Wow.
So what about labor and delivery? Talk to us about that. Because it's intimidating. It's scary. I mean, really, like that's something that I think a lot of people, especially with their first child, it's just the unknown. So of course it's a little bit stressful. So right. How do you counsel women before they do something so major?
Yes. So I could go. So I actually work as an OBGYN hospitalist. So most of my time, I work in the hospital. I spend most of my time delivering babies. So if I get riled up and start talking, then please, like, oh, we got it. Okay. Like this. So this is something that I deal with a lot. I would say the number one thing that our goal, you know, my goal, the a family's goal should be is a healthy mom and a healthy baby. So that is always number one goal, that at the end of the day, whether you deliver by vaginal birth or C-section, that mom is healthy and baby is healthy. So that's number one goal.
Mm.
And And the second thing, and this is a very close second, because I recognize that this is a really important and is a special occasion. So family should be happy with the experience. So you should walk away feeling like this was a joyous occasion. I personally always ask, is there anything in particular a family wants at the time of birth? If the gender is a surprise, then I'll offer the dad the opportunity to announce the gender or the partner or whoever wants to let everyone know. And then this is the time that we talk about birth plan or birth preferences. There are definitely some things that women should think about before they come to labor and delivery. First is pain management. If you think you want to come in and you want to get an epidural and, you know, as soon as those contractions hit, totally fine. That's pretty easy and straightforward. However, if you want to do an unmedicated birth or a birth without an epidural, and which people often say natural childbirth, I don't like to say natural childbirth because I feel like the process of birth is natural regardless of whether or not you have an epidural or a C-section, or all of it is natural. So I tend to go towards unmedicated. But if you don't want to have an epidural, then you need to think about how you're going to manage your pain. You would be surprised that some women sometimes come in and they're like, well, I don't want an epidural. It's like, okay, well, what are you going to do for pain management? And they're like, I don't know. and that's just a
That's cute, well. Right?
It's so cute. It's so cute. I'm like, this is labor, sweetheart. It hurts like a lot. So,
See, we're old moms. We can say that. Like, that's adorable.
Yes. So, and I, you know, I hate to be stereotypical, but it usually is like first time moms. And they're so like, oh, and you're like, no, you kind of need to, do you want to do Lamaze? Do you want to, hypnotherapy? Do you want to do water therapy? So think about how you're going to manage your pain before you come to labor and delivery. And then if you want to do an unmedicated birth, talk to your doctor and make sure your doctor has experience with taking care of patients who don't have an epidural, because not all doctors are equally comfortable with that, surprisingly. And then also, the hospital's approach to women who want to do an unmedicated birth. So when you don't have an epidural, when you have an epidural, your legs are pretty numb. So you're laying in the bed, you're kind of strapped to the monitor, and you're just hanging out until, you know, baby's ready to be born. But when you don't have an epidural, it is very difficult to do natural childbirth, like laying in the bed. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to get up, move around, walk around, ask, does the hospital have a shower? Do they have a tub? Do they have wireless monitoring potentially? So you can move around freely, even in the halls potentially, and still keep track of the baby. And then do the nurses have experience with helping women through natural childbirth? So you should think about those things ahead of time.
That is such great advice. I feel like my oldest is almost 14. Could have used you about 15 years ago. Could have used you. Because it's funny. I mean, Zach and I, my husband and I, were actually just talking about this last night. One of our friends is due any minute. And so they're Snapchatting, like trying to induce labor. You know how everybody does that.
Right.
And so my husband said, you know, I only just thought of this, but why in the world do we want to induce labor? Labor is so painful. It's the only time in life when someone's like, God, I really can't wait to be in a tremendous amount of pain, you know? But I said, for my first one, being an athlete my whole life, I genuinely thought I had felt it all. You know, I had broken bones. I had pulled muscles. I'm like, it can't be as bad as this. And I'm only laughing hysterically because, oh my God, it's just, there's nothing comparable. So I think it's wise that you said, like, hey, it's cool. You want to do unmedicated? Good on you. You're going to need a plan B. Just trust us on this, ladies. Right. You're going to need the idea of how you're approaching this, because you can't. I did not have that. I just went in and was like, I'm going to be totally fine. And I was not, you know, and I wish I would have known that. So yeah. I think that's really good. I wanted to make that note, but then also say, interestingly, we were just talking about, we as moms, for whatever reason, can feel judged about virtually every decision we make, right? And I feel like the first major decision we feel judged about is whether we do labor via C-section, via, you know, quote unquote, natural, whatever, epidural. We feel judged with whatever decision. So Leslie and I just put out a call to our listeners, like, no more. If you had a baby, congratulations. End of story.
Absolutely. And that was one of the other things I was going to touch upon, is that just be flexible. Some women get very attached to a specific thought about how things should go. Frankly, we're almost judging ourselves mm-hmm. more than anyone else mm-hmm. is. And women get upset if they have a C-section, or disappointed that they didn't do natural childbirth. And it's okay to feel upset and disappointed. I'm not going to take away anybody's experience of an event, but it's not okay to let that detract from this miracle of a baby that has happened, and enjoying spending time with the baby and the life you have going forward. So don't let it take away from the joy of the moment.
Yeah, I think that is great advice. And I think you're right too, that we're often the ones that are judging ourselves, you know? I mean, yes, it's true. We might kind of cast that judgment upon others too, when we're hearing birth stories or whatever, whether we aren't, you know, trained to do that. I don't know why we do that, but, but often no one's paying attention, you know, like it's you, it's your experience, it's your little family's experience. And so, we can be our biggest critic, I think. So that's a good point. And I'm sure, like, you're a very calming presence too, for those people in the hospital that are feeling disappointed or whatever that is. I like how, you know, you emphasize just the joy, the miracle of childbirth. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we should all remember that even if it didn't go like the part of labor and delivery, your body grew a human being, and that is pretty freaking amazing. So
yes. Amen.
Does that, in your line of work, obviously you deliver babies all the time, so does that ever get old? I mean, it's the miracle. Like, are you ever just like, oh my gosh, it's another day, another baby?
It sounds, at the risk of sounding like corny, it honest to goodness never gets old. That moment of seeing a new baby and hearing the baby cry and the joy of the family. I mean, it really never gets old.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's awesome.
I think these days people, I don't know if your listeners or if you've ever talked about doulas, but doulas are trained labor support people, and usually women, and they can be a tremendous help in labor. The best doulas are the ones who know how to support women and their families, but don't interfere medically. And I know a couple of fantastic doulas who just, we work collaboratively to help bring about a good experience. And there's actually some research that shows that particularly for socially disadvantaged moms, they have better birth outcomes. They initiate breastfeeding more when they have a doula. So definitely consider a doula potentially.
Now that is really interesting. So a lot of our listeners will be familiar with this idea of a doula. My kind of perception is that they're quite expensive. Is that incorrect?
Well, there are some forward-thinking states and organizations that I don't know off the top of my head, but just that maybe pay for doula services for low-income women who are having babies. But you're right, it is out of pocket, and it does potentially have some cost. Yeah.
But I like what you said, because I have to believe that one of the reasons doulas have good outcomes is it's support, right? Like, this is a moment where you need the most support. And my husband was great. He was great. But for my second pregnancy, I had actually Leslie in there. I had my other sister-in-law in there. I had my mom in there. And there's something about, you know, the female support system who, some have gone through it before or whatever, and they're looking at you and they're like, no, seriously, you can do this. you know, right. you will be okay. I got to yeah. believe that that community vibe is what helps the outcomes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I'm going to just say three more things. Clarify if your doctor will be there at the delivery, because mm-hmm. these days often it's the doctor on call, or it's somebody like me who's a hospitalist. I just kind of fill in. I work night shift, actually. So I deliver the babies that are born at night. So know that ahead of time, what you're getting into. And then as far as at the delivery, really skin to skin contact. So baby right up on your chest, right with mom. And delayed cord clamping should be the standard. As long as the baby's healthy and crying and doesn't need any resuscitation, then baby should stay with mom. We shouldn't be whisking babies away off to a warmer, you know, if they come out looking good, they really should stay with mm-hmm. mom. And then we don't need to clamp and cut the cord immediately. There's lots of evidence that waiting to cut the cord when it stops pulsating is beneficial to the baby. Mm. And actually for hundreds of years, up until the 1960s, that was the standard, that we didn't clamp the cord right away. So it was only until the 1960s that we started clamping the cord. And now we're swinging back that we should be waiting to cut the cord.
Wow. So just because they get all the nutrients from the placenta and the mm-hmm. mom still?
Yep, you got it.
Oh, interesting. I don't think I've heard that.
Yes, yep. I haven't either.
Yeah, that should really be the standard. And again, keeping baby with the mom, not, you know, whisking the baby away to a warmer should be the standard.
Okay.
And then the last thing is the nursery. You know, if you want your baby to be in the room with you, then ideally, you know, your baby should be able to stay in the room with you. As long as the baby's healthy and mom is physically able to take care of the baby, then baby should stay with mom, with their parents. That doesn't mean you don't use the nursery at all. Maybe you want to get a nap, or maybe you are having a hard time recovering from your surgery or your delivery. It's totally okay to send the baby to the nursery, but just clarify with the hospital that if you want your baby in your room, that your baby can stay in the room with you most of the time.
Yeah, these are all really great tips. And I think it's a way that we talk about engaging our mama bears, how before you even give birth, these are things that you can practically speaking, you can do these things in preparation for the birth. You can engage your mama bear, and you're already speaking on behalf of your child. So exactly. Those are fantastic tips. Mm-hmm. Let's get into this sort of shift that took place in your life. About 7 years into your practice, Nicole, you had a realization that you have said has changed the way that you think about the work that you do. So tell us the details. What led you to this shift in your perspective? Tell us what it's all about.
Yeah, I was really frustrated that I could recommend things to women about what they should do for their health, whether it be working on weight or diet, but I wasn't actually helping them to do it. And it was very difficult within the context of a 15 or 20 minute office visit to do that. And it also became really clear that health is not just not having disease, and what happens in the doctor's office is really just a small part of health. Your health is influenced by your emotional health, your social health, how your personal and professional relationships are, your spirituality or religion, your literal physical environment. All of those things are interconnected, and all of those influence your ability to be healthy and feel well. So we need to address all of those things and consider those in our approach to health.
Oh, I agree 100%. And I'm just curious, was there some resistance in the medical community to this idea when you kind of started to shift your perspective on this?
Yeah, you know, there's not really so much resistance. I think there is increasing recognition that a more holistic approach is important for health. But honestly, we don't know how to implement that approach very well in the way that we currently practice medicine. Medicine is still very much like disease-based and numbers. So you go in, you get your heart rate, your blood pressure, your weight, you get your blood drawn, you get some tests done, and you get something back that says, are you healthy or not based on these numbers. And not that those things are not important, because they are, but they certainly are not a comprehensive picture of what makes you healthy. Mm-hmm. And we may even get you to fill out a form, like an intake form. It may ask you a question about what is your religion, or how is your stress? And we may ask those questions, but honestly, in the way medicine is typically practiced today, we haven't figured out how to really incorporate that information into taking mm-hmm. care of our patients. And then particularly in really short office visits, because it takes time. Mm-hmm.
So was there kind of a moment where you were just like, oh, no, I can't do this again? Or, you know, a specific patient that made you sort of reevaluate the way that you were providing healthcare? Or was it just sort of this, you know, over 7 years of time, you weren't seeing results? Or what do you think was sort of the impetus to be like, okay, I'm going to make a change in the way that I provide my healthcare?
Yeah. One thing is that my schedule was just full, and I found it difficult to, you know, I it was hard for me to just like cut somebody off at 15 minutes and say our visit is over. So I was getting behind. So I would have patients waiting, which I hated because I think it's disrespectful of people's time. So I just wasn't able to really help patients in the amount of time that I had. And it was just really frustrating to me. I mean, mm-hmm. I really went into medicine because I wanted to help people be well. So it was difficult for me to do that in the context of, you know, 15 or 20 minute office visits. And sometimes I'd be double booked, have patients scheduled at the same time, which, you know, was always frustrating. Mm-hmm. So it just got to be to a point where I can't do it like this, and I need to do something different.
You said you noticed this. Like, how did you change? We'll get into your health coaching here in a minute, but I guess just practically speaking, so did you change how it worked in your kind of work environment at that time, or did you pull back entirely and become the health coach? Like, how did you implement this paradigm shift that you had, where you were like, you know, I don't want to be in sick care, right, where you're just treating, and you're instead of healthcare, where you're really going into what you were talking about, the spiritual, the mental, the physical, all of that. Like, did you change and say like, no, I want 25 minutes with each person? Or did you just back out entirely? Like, what happened when you right. realized this?
Yeah, I backed out entirely from outpatient medicine. It wasn't possible for me to. Ideally, I would have stretched out having like 30 minute to 1 hour appointments, but that just isn't feasible mm-hmm. typically. So I had to really sit and think about how am I going to do this in a way that I feel like I'm still using my skills and helping women and doing the things that I want to do. So I came up with this combination of being a hospitalist where I deliver babies, which is always a great thing and something that I enjoy. And then I do coaching on the side.
So this takes us to the journey of becoming a health coach. I mean, that I think takes a lot of courage for someone to just sort of, mm-hmm. you know, you stopped what you were doing and you chose a new path. So was this something like, had you been thinking about it for a while? Like, you'd heard of health coaching, you felt like you could possibly do it, or did you stop completely and just sort of push reset, like take some time, and then you learned about, you know, your next step? Or how was that process for you, you know, kind of mentally and emotionally?
Yeah, this was a really big step for me. Mm-hmm. When I finished medical school, I'm residency training, forgive me. I thought I was going to be a researcher. So I thought I was going to do research in medicine. Mm-hmm. And I did a 2-year research fellowship. And then I spent 7 years in academic medicine and trying to do research, but I was a spectacular failure at it. I just didn't do it. And it's not because I'm not capable. I'm a very smart and accomplished woman.
But obviously. Yeah.
But it was not the right place for me to be. And it wasn't working for me. It wasn't feeding my soul. I just wasn't happy in it. So I had to stop and step back and kind of look for something else that was better for me. And that was hard because I did this research fellowship for 2 years and I'd been at it for 7 years, but it's like the choice of, do I spend the rest of my life doing something that I'm not happy with, or do I just stop and do some more training and kind of reset? So I made the second option of resetting. And I reached out to a woman who helped train me at Duke, who was an OBGYN, who also had gotten into integrative medicine, and she still works at Duke. And in the process of looking up her information, I stumbled across health coaching training at Duke. And then now here we are.
So when did your kids come into the picture? I guess we've kind of forgotten to mention the fact that at some point here,
you were the one giving birth.
I did twice, as a matter of fact.
So when did that all happen?
Yeah. So my older daughter, she's 8. She was born while I was doing my research fellowship. She was 8 weeks early. You know, here I go. You know, I always talk about how I just finished talking about how the vast majority of births are normal and healthy and happy. But now mm-hmm. I'm going to tell the story of my baby born 8 weeks early that had a rare condition called duodenal atresia that required her to get surgery. It's like a 1 in 10,000 condition that required her to get surgery 3 days after she was born. And how my aunt, she was in the NICU for a month. And how my anesthesia from my C-section, the first C-section, didn't work. So feel, you know, I don't know if you've had a C-section. So when we test to see if the patient is numb. And when they did that little test on my belly, I could actually feel it. So yeah, it was bad. It was, but because our heart rate had dropped, they went ahead. And so that was a very stressful situation. So that was baby number one.
That feels like you're really putting that mildly. That is literally my worst nightmare. And I've had actual nightmares about that like they have to rush me into surgery and they're like, there's no time to give you anesthetic. And then they just start cutting something off. And that is exactly what happened to you. I cannot believe that.
Yeah, it was bad. And then so it was like, so they got her out pretty quickly. And then the anesthesiologist put something through the IV and I was like, you gave me some drugs. So after that, I was like loopy and out of it. But yeah, that was a little bit of a traumatic experience. And it was hard having a baby in the NICU. I cried every day. I finally had to limit myself to crying 3 times a day so I wouldn't cry all the time. But she's totally fine now, very healthy and happy. But it certainly has changed my perspective about, you know, approaching women that mm-hmm. have a preterm birth. I obviously have some personal experience and mm-hmm. empathy for that. And I will never, if a patient is uncomfortable doing it during a C-section, that is a hard stop. Like, I am mm-hmm. not doing anything until you, Dr. Anesthesiologist, get my patient comfortable, because I know what mm-hmm. it feels like when you're not. And then my second daughter was pretty uneventful, full term pregnancy. No problems there.
I say this all the time. I have a love-hate relationship with this idea that, like, in order to be empathetic to different people's stories, sometimes it requires us to go through that story. And you're like, can't I just have learned those lessons without having to physically go through that? Yes, you know,
exactly.
I don't understand why I am here.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. That's incredible. So you actually wrote in the Huffington Post an article called Why You Don't Have a Health Coach and Why You Should. We'll link to it in our show notes. We both read it. But we want to hear from you. Like, break it down for our listener. What is a health coach and why do they need one?
Yeah, so health coaching is really all about helping people make behavior change to improve their lives, whether it's losing weight, quitting smoking, exercising, reducing stress, all of those kinds of things. And the reason I think health coaches are helpful is because behavior change is hard. If it was easy to just make those changes, then we would all do it. But behavior change is not easy. And the integrative part for me is, again, that holistic approach that we talked about. And I don't, it's not that you force everyone to sit down and say, like, what is your, the contribution of spirituality, but we at least consider it and don't just skip over it. And we recognize the importance. And it's also very individualized. So I spend a lot of time with the way I was trained as a Duke Health coach is we look at your health vision and the things that you value. And the reason that that's important is to start and do some background work about your health vision and values is that when you can connect a goal to what's important to you, not important to me as your physician, not important to your husband or your partner or your friend, what's important to you, then it makes it more likely that you can get it done. So you really connect it to something that's meaningful for you.
That's really empowering, I feel like, for the patient or the person that you're working with, just to your general health feels sometimes like you don't really have any control over it, right? Like when am I going to get Alzheimer's? I don't know. Am I going to get cancer someday? But when you can sit down and sort of cast that vision of like, okay, I want to be able to, you know, go on walks with my grandchildren someday, or when I'm 60, I want to be able to run 3 miles, or just to even sit down and cast that vision, I think is really empowering to a person.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And then we take that next step. And when you've come up, you're like, okay, this is what I value. This is what's important. And then in the next step, thinking about a goal, it's really organized so that you can complete the goal and maintain that change. So we do what's called SMART goals. They're specific, they're measurable, they're action oriented, and the action that you take is under your direct control. Make sure it's realistic and fits within your life schedule and also timed. So we really focus it on what works best for you, like how do you get this done within the context of your life? How do you learn best? What are some strengths that you can bring to the table to help you accomplish this? It's really empowering for people to realize, wait a minute, I can do this. And I do have those strengths and I can bring those to the table.
Oh my gosh. You know what I loved hearing just now, as I'm a personal trainer. So one of my frustrations is they come to me just with fitness goals, mostly like I want to lose 30 pounds. And well, why, you know, and when you talk to them long enough, they don't really care about losing 30 pounds. I mean, they don't really care. They think they should care. You know what I'm saying? Like our culture tells them they should care. But like you said, what they really want to do is they really want to be able to get up and down with their kids. What they really want to do is be able to have the stamina to carry their child up the stairs or to carry them to bed. This is what they really want to do. And maybe it comes with losing 30 pounds. Maybe it doesn't, you know. But what I love to hear you say is that you get past what they think they want their goal to be, and you'll figure out what actually, like, what's making you come alive? How can we make you come alive more fully and on a daily basis? And how can we do it in a setting that, like, how do we set you up for success?
Yes, set up for success and how to maintain that success in the long term. And it's also based on science. Like, it's actually, our training is based on the science of behavior change. So it's really grounded in evidence.
So is an important part of that behavior change just having goals, measurable goals, a very detailed plan? Or, you know, I'm asking this because I think so often women and moms are so busy caring for everyone else that we often forget to care about ourselves. So, you know, how do you get your patients to actually do what they need to make those long-term behavior changes?
Yeah. So the thing about integrative health coaching is it's actually not about me planning anything specifically for my clients to do. So I'm more the expert on the process of behavior change, and the client is the expert on her life. So I guide her through this process of setting goals and when and how to get it done. And when you start in a way that it's meaningful to the client, it's not meaningful to me, it's meaningful to her. And when you start from a place of it being meaningful to her, then people get excited and energized. And it actually comes pretty smoothly how you figure out how to get it done. I do take women through a process of like, okay, so you want to walk 3 times a week. So tell me what days you want to do that. And then just walk me through a typical day. Show me how you're going to fit it in. And we do get it down sometimes to the details of like, I'm going to put my shoes in right next to my desk, because that's what works for that woman in order for her to get it done. Mm-hmm. So it's really a very individualized process. And there's also a lot of accountability. You have to be accountable for making this progress. And we talk about that in the coaching relationship. And that typically jumpstarts women to take some time for themselves.
Mm. Yeah. So you're talking specifically about, you know, your clients, but I'm just curious, in the grand scheme of things, you know, we're, as Americans, the unhealthiest we've ever been. And specifically women, I think, like, what is going on? Why are we forgetting to nurture that part of ourselves? Why are we so unhealthy as Americans? What are you seeing on the ground?
Yeah, that's a really complicated problem and not a really single identifiable issue. I do think that our society is not really designed to support people's responsibility to make smart choices. So when I say that, what I mean is that, yes, we all have some individual responsibility for taking care of ourselves and doing those things. But it's a lot harder to do that when you don't have the education, that you don't know the right things to eat or how to exercise or take care of yourself, and you don't have the resources to do that. Mm-hmm. Whether it's financial resources, you don't have, you know, access to affordable healthy food or spaces to exercise. We know that cheap, nutritionally deficient food is readily available 24/7.
Oh my gosh. Don't get me started. You know how you went on about labor? Like, don't get me started.
And then stress reduction. Stress is a normal part of life. We all have stress, but we don't learn how to deal with that. And it has real impacts. There was an interesting study that just came out in the last few days that stress was actually overriding the benefits of healthy eating in a study that a woman did.
Oh, no.
And yeah, it was overriding the benefits of healthy eating, which is, you know, disheartening. But it also speaks to the fact that we need to help, as a society, people better manage and deal with stress. And we also need to start younger. Like, kids should have physical activity. There shouldn't be vending machines in school. Kids should have healthy options to food. If they are exposed to those things earlier, both at home and in public, then they carry those habits into adulthood.
Oh my gosh, you're right. And I know, I mean, that was kind of a trick question, because it is. Like, I know that the problem is so gray. You know, I mean, there are 1,000 different approaches to the problem to try to create a solution. So I appreciate exactly what you said. That was a really concise answer for a hard question. But,
you know, I do want to say one thing. Like, there's a lot of, like, why can't people just get it together kind of thing? And people want to be healthy. It's not that people, there's only a small segment of people who are sitting around and deciding that they want to eat McDonald's and cheeseburgers and they don't care about being unhealthy. People actually want to be healthy, but they're struggling to figure out how.
Yeah, I so agree. And I can't help but see the connection to what we talked about earlier. I listen to so many health and wellness podcasts, and they'll often have MDs on who admit their training in nutrition as they earned their degrees was negligible, right? So, and no matter how many times I hear this, it still shocks me. I just still can't believe that there's not a really large nutritional component to any kind of medical practice, just because of, you know, more and more research showing that nutrition affects so much of the heart disease and the high cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, et cetera. So I'm curious, you know, part of it has to be, like you said, with your OB-GYN work, you get 3 minutes with your patient. There's not a reason to then actually counsel about the mental, physical, spiritual health. But how do we change that? Like, how do you feel like this could be changed? Do you think it could affect long-term outcomes?
Yeah, that's, again, really, really tough. And if I knew the answer, then, you know,
yeah.
I wish, but ideally, we just need to have a more integrative approach to care. I don't think physicians are going to get more training in nutrition. I don't necessarily see that happening. But we should be able to connect patients with nutrition, and it should be easy to do so. It should be easy for the patient. So it should be easy for the physician to refer to a nutritionist. It's not always easy. It should be easy for the patient to get to the nutritionist, and it should be affordable. Like, you shouldn't have to pay an arm and a leg to learn about it. It should be covered by insurance. And then education is important, but sometimes that's like the first step. We have to actually help people incorporate that information into their lives. And I can give an example. I had a client who wanted to work on her diet and her exercise. And, you know, often the first step is more nutrition and a personal trainer. But in her case, it wasn't that she didn't know how to eat or exercise. She was getting frustrated and was giving up when she had setbacks. So she would start a program and then she'd miss a day and then she'd get down on herself and then have a hard time getting back in the game. So when we incorporated not just nutrition, but a more holistic approach, then that, like with coaching, then we realized that when she was better able to handle setbacks, then she was more consistent. So that basic nutrition, of course, is a start in that information, but we need to really help people figure out how to use it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Just kind of making sure all of those layers and all of those aspects of health are working together. And I can see why then a health coach is like the perfect person really to help you do that. That's what you do, right? Like, you integrate all of these things.
You got it. Yes.
Yes. So for listeners who are hearing this and, you know, maybe they're not familiar with a health coach, but are now kind of convinced, like, this is what I need. What advice can you give them on finding one? Or is this a more common approach to medicine these days?
Not more common. The first thing I would say is ask about the person's training, because there are no standards for health coaching. Anyone can say they're a health coach. So you really want to clarify that the person has had some training. And there's a website called the National Consortium for Credentialing Health and Wellness Coaches. And I can give you that link, but they maintain a list of programs that meet standards for health coaching training. And they're working to make standards. So that's the first thing. Make sure they have training. Second thing, make sure they will do a free consult visit, because the fit is very important. And you're going to be working with this person probably over a 3-month period. So you want to make sure you have a fit for the person and allow them to, you should have the opportunity to ask questions and see how everything works. So talk to somebody that gives you a free 30-45 minute consult visit. And it should really be about 3 months. The science shows it takes 2 to 3 months to make a lasting behavior change. If anybody's telling you there's a quick fix, they can fix you in a week, you know, that's just not true. So coaching should be structured to, and I know you as a personal trainer, you know that. So coaching should be structured to support that. And it can also be done by phone. It can be done by Skype. It doesn't have to be in person.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to brag. I've figured out the solution. The solution here is that but I was thinking when you were talking that if I go to a doctor and my leg's broken, they send me to x-rays and then they send me to an orthopedic person, right? And really, like, what would our offices look like? Because I think you're right. I think, you know, doctors aren't going to get more nutrition training, any of that. But what if we saw nutritionists or health coaches like that, like another aspect of that, where someone comes in with high cholesterol and they say, okay, I'm going to refer you to this person and I want you to do that and then come back in 6 months or whatever. I mean, that could be a game changer.
Yes, it is. And there's some practices, you're exactly right. There's some practices that are working on moving towards that model. There's some hurdles because right now health coaching isn't covered by insurance for the most part, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But once this organization gets it to be where they're national credentialing standards, then hopefully health insurance coverage will follow that. So yeah, you're exactly right.
Okay. So I didn't come up with it, but I still endorse it.
Of course.
Well, Nicole, you've said, you know, that so much of this is, you know, so much of the first step is the education. And it's exciting to me to see someone like yourself who is educating your own young girls, right? Like they're seeing your example of just with your value of health and wellness. They see you taking care of yourself. You're modeling this behavior for them. You're also helping others, you know, do the same thing. So let me ask you, what are you hoping is the biggest lesson that that your daughters take away from seeing their mom do all of this?
The biggest thing that I want them to know is that they deserve to be healthy and well, and not because of who they, you know, like who they know or how much money you have or your job, but just by virtue of the gift of being alive. Mm. We all deserve to be healthy and well. And women in particular, I really feel don't always believe that.
Mm. Oh my gosh. Amen. That gives me goosebumps because I do feel like once they know that, then they can't forget that. And exactly. Then it makes all of that so much easier to maintain and to stick with.
Yes. Yes. Like we all deserve to be healthy and well, just by being here. Mm-hmm. If I can get women to remember that more than anything else. And my girls too, like you deserve it. We all deserve it. Mm.
Yeah. Why is that so hard? I don't know. When you say it,
I know.
Like it makes sense. Like, yes. But why is it so hard? I don't know.
I don't know.
It is.
Okay. We all just had a moment. Like,
let's mourn that idea. No, I was thinking the other day though about my daughter, and it is interesting to be a mom to a daughter because I often think about, just like you said, like, I need her to know this. It's not that I want her to know this. Like, I need you to know this. Because when you realize that you're worth it, then you act like it affects everything, right? And I just, it occurred to me that, like, oh, I need to talk to myself like that. Because, you know, my mom is somewhere like, I hope my daughter knows this. She needs to know that, you know, my mom desperately wants that of me too. And so there is something about watching it play out in your daughter that makes you be like, oh, okay, if I want this for her, I should also want this for me.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, you guys, like a year ago, I had an appointment and got a write-up to go to a lab to have my cholesterol checked. And I haven't done it. Like, I'm just sitting here thinking like, this was like forever ago. I don't value myself.
I know. We all have our moments. I'm so late on my mammogram. I'm ashamed to say. Yeah. But I'm working on it. I have a schedule.
Like, why am I not? I like live two blocks from our like hospital lab too. So I don't know. I feel it though.
I feel like that is going to make listeners feel better hearing that a doctor is late on her mammogram. I do feel like that'll be like, oh, okay. Thank God. It's not just me.
Yes, but she's trying. Yep. This doctor is trying. Yes,
I am. Works in progress, all of this.
Okay, so Nicole, you write on your website about something that Tessa and I love to talk about and be totally annoying about, I think, and that's meditation. So you say, I know you have 5 minutes a day to spend on yourself for better health and wellness. What can you do for 5 minutes a day that reduces stress, anxiety, pain, and depression and increases your compassion, self-control, focus, and memory? Meditate. We are for sure believers. So tell us about your meditation practice and really why you would recommend it to probably your clients, but to specifically to the moms who are listening here today.
Yeah. So I meditate anywhere from 5 to 7 days a week, usually first thing in the morning for 15 minutes. And I've been meditating for a little over 4 years, just kind of self-taught, looking around online. And I have an app that I use on my phone. And I used to think meditating would turn me into this like Zen person who walks around cool as a cucumber all the time. But it didn't, but no. And this is where it may be applicable for moms in particular, but you still get frustrated with things and you get upset about things, but it's not nearly over as much like small stuff. Mm-hmm. And I can move out of that frustrated and angry space much faster. So I can kind of like say, okay, I'm mad because of this, or I'm frustrated because of that, but I can like notice it and move on a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Or, meditated. And it also helps with patience. If you might imagine, I have a little bit of a type A-ish personality and a patience problem. And having children can test your patience. So definitely meditation helps with patience for me. And forgiveness. That's the other mm-hmm. thing that also helps with forgiveness. Yeah.
I always say in my yoga classes when I'm doing meditation, because I do think that is a common misconception that it just like you'll be making your granola and you won't be shaving your armpits, you know, after a few months of meditation. And maybe you won't. I don't know. But I always tell them, like, you don't have to be afraid of that. I feel like meditation doesn't change who you are. It just kind of exposes who you are, right? Mm-hmm. And it keeps you detached from those, like you said, the kind of physical manifestations of your emotions. Like, yeah, it is
detached is a great word.
Yes. Yeah. It's so you'll still have those. If you're not a very patient person, it doesn't necessarily make you more patient. It just makes you aware of how quickly you become impatient, you know? Right. So right. I don't want anybody, I love that. I want everybody to hear that. Like, it doesn't change who you are. It'll feel like it does, but it doesn't. You'll still be you.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
So Nicole, you meditate. You are, of course, a health coach who encourages other women to take care of themselves. So we have to know, what else do you do besides the meditation? What do you do to nurture your other self, that part of yourself that is just for you?
Yeah. So I like to read, actually. I've been a reader since I was young. So I try to read, and I like to spend time with my family, with my girls. My parents are not mm-hmm. that far away. So I spend a lot of time with family and reading, or being outdoors, just sitting in the backyard or mm-hmm. taking a walk. Those are things that I like to do.
Sounds what are you
wonderful.
Reading?
I was going to say, any recommendations?
Yeah. Right now I'm reading a book by Pema Chodron on how to meditate, and I can't remember the title, how to meditate and calm your mind. I can let you know, but I'm getting through it slowly, a little bit at a time, but mm-hmm. just to kind of strengthen my meditation practice a little bit. So that's what I'm reading now.
I love it.
Well,
Nicole, thank you so much for taking time out of your day for us. I'm sure you could tell that we understand, we fully realize that you don't represent all the doctors and the health coaches in the world, but clearly some of our questions wanted you to. So I appreciate that you navigated that so well.
Oh, you know what? Can I say one more thing about taking time to nurture yourself? I hope we all prioritize and make time for things that are important to us. And if we have a hard time prioritizing, then ask for help from your village, ask for help from your network. I am fortunate enough. My husband is phenomenal. He's very supportive. He's like our family house manager. He gets the stuff ready for the girls, you know, their forms at school and all that stuff, gets them ready for school. His Afro puff game is so on point.
That's amazing.
Getting their hair done in the morning. So I'm thankful in that regard. But if your husband can't do that or you don't have that support, ask your girlfriend. Say, look, can you watch the kids for an hour so I can go to my, you know, pure beret class? Or can we team up together and you take them this day and I'll take them that day? So we all have some time for ourselves. So please feel free to ask for help and ask, you know, be comfortable asking for help and for your village and taking that time to really nurture yourself, because we all need it.
And your village wants, your village wants to help you.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
So Tessie, will you watch my kids while I go get my cholesterol checked?
Yes. I'll be there this weekend. You have an appointment at 10 a.m. on Saturday.
So. There you go. The health coach in me says, when are you going to get it done? You got to make sure it's timed so you get the goal done.
Exactly.
I love it.
Yeah,
thank you again, Nicole. Tell our listeners where they can find you online, and you know they're going to want to get to know you a little bit better. Where can they find out more about you and your practice?
Sure. So my website is www.ncrcoaching. So that's all together, ncrcoaching.com. And if your listeners are interested in health coaching, I'd love to offer them a $50 discount off of my 3-month health coaching practice. So they can just go to ncrcoaching.com/Mama Bear Dares and they can get a discount. Or you can just, Or you can email me. My email is Nicole@ncrcoaching.com. I'm happy to answer questions that you have, do free consult visits, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you so much. This has been such a delightful conversation, and I'm so thankful really for the work that you're doing in this world. Thanks, Nicole.
And I will say I am on Facebook also, but I that's like one of the things that I don't have as much time to keep up.
Sure.
So I will reach out. Certainly, if you reach out to me there, I will get back to you, but please don't hold it against me if I don't post like every single day.
Absolutely. And I just got to say, I have had a natural doc through Skype, and it worked wonder. Like, if people are hesitant to reach out to you because you're not in their local area, maybe you are, and that'd be great. But if they're not, like, don't hesitate. There's no hesitation. It's amazing what can be done over the phone, through Skype, and all of that. So definitely reach out to Nicole. Nicole, you've just been so great. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for having me. This has been really fun.
So today, Mama Bears, we encourage you to be an advocate for your own health. Wherever you land, whether you're thinking about becoming pregnant, you're pregnant and preparing for birth, you're in the midst of raising little ones, or you're well past the childbearing years and late on your mammogram, we dare you to care for your health and be proactive in the way that you treat and care for the miracle that is your body. We dare you to think about what it is that you want your body to be able to do. How do you want it to be able to perform? This isn't a matter of the number on the scale, but instead the way in which your body is your vehicle in this life. What do you need to do now to ensure that you can play with your babes on the floor or go on a bike ride with your teenagers? What do you need to do now to ensure that you'll be able to travel across the world within your retirement or run that 5K or half marathon you've always dreamt about? Healthcare is not black and white, and there is not just one way that it can be practiced in this country of ours. Think about the way you receive your care and push a little bit. Is it ideal? Does it work for you? Maybe this is the beginning of a journey. Maybe it's just a reminder that you and your mental and physical state matter. Mama Bears, you matter. Today and every day, we dare you to take care of yourself.
So true. So Leslie, I'll check in with you, make sure you've gotten your blood drawn.
Okay.
Yes, and we're going to, we'll touch base with Nicole, make sure she's got her mammogram. Yep. And you guys, If there is something that you've been putting off and you need an accountability partner, we will be your accountability partners. Let us know. I mean, it might not be good to like post on, maybe you don't want it public.
Maybe just message us.
Yes, just message us.
DM.
Exactly. We would be happy to fulfill that role for you if you're too embarrassed to tell your best friend. We get it. We totally get it. You guys, make sure that you do follow us on social media. It's the first place that you'll find out some of the exciting stuff that we have going on. And there's a lot of it. We are we're getting all kinds of excited about all the tings over here. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, we're everywhere.
Everywhere. You can't escape the sisters.
That's right. And make sure you subscribe and please rate us and review us on iTunes. I know we're not offering a giveaway currently, but whenever we do offer the next giveaway, it's going to be offered to you. Even if you leave your review now, it'll be to all of our iTunes reviewers. So do that right now if you will. And yeah, you guys, when you comment on our posts about these, it just gives love to the person we interviewed. And I mean, there's love and there's more love. Right, Leslie?
We have so much to give. We have
so much to give. So you guys have an awesome week. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of your Monday with us.
Yeah, thanks so much. We'll see you on Wednesday.